Hello, welcome to Season 1, a podcast where two best friends watch, review, and recommend television series that only lasted one season. My name is Andrew.
And my name is Presley.
And welcome back. Apologies. As you may be able to tell, I'm still sick, but we said, screw it. It's been too long.
Yeah.
Let's just ride it out, and we're going to record. So thank you guys for your patience.
I'll edit out all the coughing. Don't worry, listeners.
Edit out all the coughing. I'll try not to be, like, sniffly and coughy. I'll just try to, like, you know, power through. We're drugged
up.
Do
it for the fans,
ready to go.
Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like weekend at Bernie's-ing like me right now in this podcast.
He's on
like
a bunch of pulleys.
We're just like trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so welcome. Thank you for your patience. We're here. We're back. This week, or month, if you will, we watched Almost Human, one of Presley's favorite shows. So we have a little bit of a star bias, I think, on this one already. But without any further ado, Presley, if you wouldn't mind, after the intro song script
narration.
Music thing, narration, would you please give us a synopsis and we'll dig right in.
The year is 2048. Evolving technologies can no longer be regulated. Dangerous advancements forever alter the criminal landscape. Police are not prepared. Law enforcement combats this corruption with a new line of defense. But not all are created equal.
The idea behind the DRNs was to be as human as possible. They were based on a program called Synthetic Soul.
That's one of the crazy ones.
I'll lead you in.
Let's go.
Now all cops, human and man-made together, take on the battle to watch over us all.
All right, well, the intro kind of tells you everything that I'm about to tell you a little bit in the synopsis, but just for clarity's sake, I will still read out what we've written. So, Almost Human was a 2013 mystery crime procedural that actually takes place in the year 2048. The show focuses on Detective John Kennex, played by Carl Urban, as he returns to the police force several months after a raid that he was running has gone bad, with him being the only survivor and having lost one of his legs. He now has an android replacement leg. At this point in the future, technology has advanced far enough to where every detective has an android partner known as an MX. John, upon returning to the force, wants a human partner, as it was good enough for his father, a very traditional old-school detective. And in trying to not have to deal with the bullshit that the MXs kind of wrought on him, he pushes his newly assigned MX out of a car onto the highway to get destroyed by a semi. His replacement android is a DRN named Dorian, appropriately, played by Michael Ealy, who has been decommissioned along with the rest of the DRN line when they are believed that their emotions have made them unstable and harmful. Unlike the MXs, who are very stereotypical, vacant, and unemotional robots, just kind of standing there and then doing whatever you ask them to without question,
yeah.
The DRNs and Dorian have emotions, look more human, you know, wear typical clothes, unlike the MXs who wear like tactical military armor, but still possess the same strength, intelligence, and combat skills as the other MXs. Over the course of the series, John and Dorian solve a variety of crimes, all usually related to the group that led to the botched raid, where John lost his leg and was the only survivor, which was conducted by a crime organization known as InSyndicate. The series ends with a revelation that Dorian somehow contains organic human memories of a childhood that he couldn't possibly have since he's an android, and the two have now become friends and are much more trusting of one another, and they run off to chase more crimes together after Dorian has gifted John a brand new robotic leg, top of the line. End of series.
I thought you were going to say, and then they rode off into the sunset hand in hand or something.
No, it is raining and already night when they're talking.
Yeah. Yep. Well, thank you for that synopsis.
Yep.
That about does it for us. Thanks for joining us.
This is what you always do when you don't like a show that I like.
We're on a bit of a time budget. Oh, man.
So I take it that you did not enjoy the show.
Well, I mean, no, I didn't. I really didn't enjoy it that much. It was okay. I don't know. I just felt like I have a couple things.
Okay. Give me your couple things.
So first and foremost, when it comes to like story and or like plot, if you will, like the overarching theme pieces if they were there, they certainly weren't made like very obvious until like you get toward the episode. I can't remember which episode it is. Episode 9 of the 13 episode series.
Okay.
Where this like advanced combat android is like in play, and then the guy who created the DRN and the XRN later is like involved. Then you kind of hear a little bit about the DRN, and then like this wall, this fucking wall that exists. Presley, this is the first time, nine episodes in, all of a sudden there's this wall and there's people behind this wall, and we don't have any other explanation than that, except that, you know, supposedly it's like a wasteland, the outskirts of the city of like, where are they? New Atlanta, New Chicago. What is it?
It's never said. It's just ambiguous.
Oh, I thought it was like new something.
If it is, I don't remember, but it's not, it's meant to be kind of in any city, it's not locale.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's supposed to just kind of, so okay. Like that's supposedly right. An overarching theme is like that they introduced. They're like, oh, there's this wall thing and there's people behind the wall and like you'd be crazy to go past the wall. Like obviously that sets up like, oh, at some point there's going to be some like, you know, operation beyond the wall. It's going to matter. It doesn't. Spoiler alert. It doesn't.
They only had 13 episodes to work with.
Then why even introduce the wall?
Because you're trying all to set up was, multi-season arcs. You don't want to just like.
Yeah, I guess. So that was one thing. And then as far as overarching theme, like I there was like an episode here and there that kind of tied back to the group a little bit. The group that like the what would you call it? In Syndicate.
Yeah.
Like there was a guy who was already arrested that they were just trying to get to like admit to crimes or whatever. And that was like part of an episode. And he was like, oh, yeah, your girlfriend who was part of the group or whatever, like, that's not even her name. And then he has, like, flashbacks. And, like, that's really the most tie back we get to a lot of it.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
No. I'm just trying to understand the greater point that you're making. Other than
so
like,
what I'm saying is, like, the overarching theme, there isn't really one. And then to combine that with... like every episode, like I just didn't feel like the episodes, the crimes they investigated felt very believable. As like, I mean, they felt very believable. They felt very on the nose. It wasn't like as creative as I was expecting for like, oh, futuristic. We have androids and technology beyond belief. I don't know.
It's interesting, right? Because you're bringing up. I think a problem that is easy to bring up when you think about the way television exists now versus the way it existed 12 years ago when the show aired. 12 years ago, and still to this day, but far less common, we had a lot more shows that were very much more one-off episodes, self-contained, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's an overarching narrative subtly, but it's usually not a grander kind of thing. If we think back to Alcatraz, which came out the year before this show, came out.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you hate it when I bring up Alcatraz, as all of our listeners do. We need merch that talks about me always talking about Alcatraz. But
I'd rather be watching Alcatraz. That's a shirt. TM,
ooh,
TM,
yeah,
TM.
Let's do it. TM. those shows have the overarching plot, right? In Alcatraz, it's the jump when all the people move from 1969 to the present day, right? And in this show, it's like what's going on with this botch raid and in Syndicate, right? That's like the overarching narrative and things going over the wall. Now, that is the subtle thing. And then each episode has its very own self-contained storyline that may or may not play into it subtly, right? Shows aren't made like that as much today. And if they are, they tend to be considered, I think, either the sitcom-y shows that are never have real continuity to speak of, or they're kind of the bottom of the barrel police procedurals that we see often. You know, the ones that run for a really long time, like the NCIS's or the CSI, you know, whatever. Yeah. And so I think this was trying to find like a happier middle ground when it was airing. And for me, it doesn't miss that mark. And there's an important asterisk as to why. And I want to share that in a moment after you've made your point.
So I get what you're saying is they tried to do both, but they did both in a mediocre way. And so like, I would think that they should have just picked one, like either pick every episode is like in its own little world and there's no overarching theme. And that's what you get. And there's some slow character development where like, you know, Kennex and, what's her name?
Detective Stahl,
like end up romantically involved because of course there's this cat and mouse like thing between them about how they're both interested in each other, but neither one, you know, it's the same old tired trope. Like neither one can admit it. He's been burned and he's stoic and he can't express his feelings because he's a tough detective. And she's like nervous and obvious and like obviously into him, but she's like, oh, I can't say anything. Like, dude, every single show I've ever watched has that like in it. That's why it was like not very special to me.
Think like this show adds enough wrinkle to all of the tropes to make it a little bit more interesting than maybe you feel. For instance, right, in the example you just cited, right, John is the hard-boiled detective, the classic like ornery kind of doesn't really like people vibe, right? And in a show where every detective is paired with a literal unfeeling, emotionless robot, he is the one that gets the emotional robot that he doesn't know how to deal with because he has emotions, and Kennex is like that. It's a fun inversion where you have the real human being the unemotional, kind of vacant character, and then you have the robot being the emotionally driven, more interesting character because he has these legitimate conflicts as being the only android with emotions seemingly that it really exists right now. There's an episode where they meet another DRN who is just like fixing equipment in one of the episodes. And he was formerly a police officer because that's why the DRNs were created. And so then they bring him along for like a ride along and he causes like millions of dollars in damage and like fucks everything up. And that's like the whole thing is because this emotional dude is really trying to, you know, embrace and return to what he always wanted to do, which is be a cop. And here is Detective John, the real human who has a robot leg that he hates and hates all robots and technology. And it's, I like that weird kind of thing. And I think that you don't.
It's not that I didn't like it. It's that like, cause I had some fun in some scenes, like watching the other DRN like completely fuck up. I was like, damn.
He like tackles a guy, which causes a car to roll away, which causes a drone to be shot out, which causes something to fall out of the sky to destroy another car. It's like, it's a Rube Goldberg of insanity.
Yeah. It's a little comical in that, right? Like there were some moments that I thought were funny, you know, like there were little pockets of like funny skits or whatever you want to call them, like where, you know, Kennex is like, oh, look, I have a bionic leg. Like, oh, you're just a human. Oh, look what I can do. And he stabs himself in the leg and he just traumatizes all these little kids. They're like screaming and the parents are like, get away from that man. Let's leave. And of course he stabs his like synthetic leg and it doesn't hurt him or anything, but you know, they don't know that. So, you know, there's silly little like things like that. And I'm not saying every single like second of this show sucked and I hated it. Right. But like, I think for me, it was just missing, like I said, that element of some kind of like overarching theme that I felt like they tried to build up to, but they didn't really connect any of it.
Yeah.
And I know it was 13 episodes, but like, if you're only going to have a 13 episode, like season one, pick one. Like you can create a show that has a lot of episodes that are all within their own
pocket
vacuum or their own little pocket in the series. And then you can lead into in the final episode, a greater theme, which is going to carry into your season two and your series at large. Right.
Yeah.
And then you work that in, but like just every now and then they're just like, they just lob like here's an overarching theme thing. All right, so, that'll never happen.
So
forget about it.
This is
like, that's what I didn't like.
Okay, so this also goes back to the problem that I was setting earlier that I had yet to say.
Yeah.
About why I think it makes this show harder is because we were watching it on the iTunes release, which I had purchased many years ago, and with that, along with when it aired, it was inadvertently aired out of order.
Oh, really?
Really. So if we were to watch it in canon order of like the events that are supposed to happen in the show, which if you think about, and having known, like, I know the show better than you do because I've watched this several times at this point, I can tell you that the themes that you're talking about are fleshed out better when watched in the canonical order over the order that's presented. Because the episodes are pretty out of order. It goes 1, 8, 6, 10, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 7, 11, 12, 13. So that's like, if we were watching them in order, quote unquote, we would have had to watch the first episode on iTunes, then the eighth episode on iTunes, then the sixth episode. Like, we would have had to jump around manually, right? And I know that episodes 9 and 7, both which are the lead up to 11, 12, and 13, the final episodes, all talk more about the wall. And episode 9 is the one with Danica that has the robot that murders. It just goes on a murder spree, essentially.
Yeah, that's what introduced the wall. Yeah,
exactly, right? So you have this like 4 or 5 episode thing that leads up to the final conclusion. Now, that's not an excuse. I'm not trying to say that this all justifies the or invalidates the claims that you're making or you know, separates your frustration. But I do think like this has happened a few times now with shows that we've watched where they're out of order somewhat for no reason, or because someone fucked up at the studio, or because they thought it didn't matter, whatever. It was when they finished editing those episodes. But I do think it adds a little bit of information and color, because you can imagine if we watched Resident Evil, a show that's very narratively driven, and they just switch 2 random episodes, the 2nd and the 7th episode, it would really throw off the narrative and make it much harder to parse the greater overarching story. So I just think it's my little note. It's my little caveat. Also, the show this isn't on IMDb. This is from my own deep research, because I'm a maniac. It was originally supposed to be 16 episodes, and so they had to condense down 3 of their scripts into the other 13 scripts. So that I think accounts for some of your other complaints. Now,
missing 3 episodes that could have helped everything together.
When it's a 45-minute long series, like, you know, missing out on 2+ hours of information, both just generic random story to flesh out characters, but also those in-depth ones, matters a lot more.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I want to know.
Totally valid.
So she's not on the podcast, and we got to get her on here pretty soon. But your girlfriend has been watching these shows with you the last couple of seasons.
In large part. Yeah.
Can you give us a little amuse-bouche of what she thought of the show? Did she differ in your opinion? Did she hate it more? Did she like it more?
She did not differ. I think she liked it less because she's not like super into the like action crime procedural thing.
Okay.
We watched like I think the first 3 episodes together.
Yeah,
and then I watched the rest independently. But she was just like, "Yeah, I don't really want to watch this."
Okay, fair enough. It's just interesting because this is a show I was watching when I was in high school, and I enjoyed it and it was fun. And I just it's one of those shows that we talk about where sometimes you just want to turn your brain off and enjoy some kind of wanton carnage and destruction, and then have some unique plots that can't really take place in reality. They have a fun they have several fun episodes that I can think of off the top of my head, and I would even think that you could think of them. They have one called Arrhythmia, where it's about people that are getting like black market synthetic organs, and they're being like extorted for money. And so when they can't pay on time, they just shut down people's organs. And so people are basically like falling dead in the middle of nowhere and or committing crimes to try and stay alive. You know, the show opens with this man who doesn't speak any English. I believe he's speaking Mandarin or Cantonese or something. He is like trying to get people to put him on a heart lung machine, you know, basically put him on bypass because he knows his heart is about to fail while he's holding them hostage in an operating room. And at which point he falls dead because
time
they stopped
out.
His heart. Yeah. Right. And so like that's a fun concept. That's a concept that you can't really have in the current existence. Right. Then they did do some things that were kind of foreshadowing a little bit. There's an episode called Simon Says, which is about this guy named Simon who straps explosive collars to people and basically live streams them on the dark web to get them to get money for him or to embarrass people or whatever. And it's like, unfortunately, really messed up. But it's like predicting, you know, in 2012, obviously the internet existed, but it was predicting some of the trends that were happening in terms of people doing really horrible things online, that kind of. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, I think some of those episodes were interesting. I think I don't know. I just like the. I just don't know that I was that wowed by it. Like okay. I guess maybe if I was watching this in 2013 when it came out, I might have been more wowed by it. Yep. But like all the episodes, like the episode you just mentioned, where it's, you know, the guy who's a cyber criminal, you know, strapping bombs to people and like, you know, live streaming the chaos and dissent or whatever. Maybe these guys were the first people to put that into a show or you know.
Yeah. When did Twitch kind of conceptualize that? Thing?
But like 2014.
So this predates that, 2014, right?
But yeah, but like, well, that's not even the one. But I have seen that on other shows, similar concept, right? Yeah. Where like live stream, someone's gonna die, like something has to happen before totally. You know they have to no, be saved. Like there's Black shows. Mirror episodes about that or whatever kind of thing. But you know, maybe it's because I've already seen those. So I'm not watching this in the time that it came out. Maybe that's why it's not that interesting. There's a lot of reasons why potentially, but some other things that I didn't like to move on. So it's supposed to be like 2048, right?
Yeah.
Think about how different cars look now versus what they looked like in 2013.
Okay.
Okay, you can probably conceptualize that, yes. Right? You look like a Toyota Corolla or a Camry or something and what it looks like now and like a Corvette or like all those things, right? So it's supposed to be like 30 years, 35 years in the future. Every single car is just the regular car you would see on the street with some like black. Okay, first off, it was painted. Every car was just painted flat black for the most part. And then every car just had like dome hubcaps on it.
Yep.
And that was supposed to be like futuristic.
Well, you forget that they make electric car sounds too.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just saying.
They make electric car sounds too. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. But like, dude, I did not believe any of that. And then there were also. This was the funniest part, and I pointed this out to Leanna when I was watching it, is in random street scenes, when you, like, in, like, kind of your B-roll or C-roll scenes or whatever, like, when they're transitioning scenes, and it's, like, a street scene or whatever, there's, like, a car that drives by, like, a real car on set, whatever, drives by, and then there's always an alley, and there's this, like, fake-as-fuck-looking box that's driving toward you with bright lights that obscures the fact that it's like the most CGI box with fake lights on it.
Pretending to be.
Did you not notice
kind of
that?
Car? No, I know what you're
talking supposed
about.
To be some futuristic car.
Yeah, right.
And I just thought it was like so janky. Yeah. And like for a show that was canceled for having such a high, in part for having such a high budget and like production value and like all that, I was like, that's what we got.
You know, it's interesting, right? Because you're right that those things stick out, you know, when you're calling them out.
It was so bad.
But then I also think about some of the practical effects that they put on. For instance, like a lot of times when they're dealing with, you know, one of the crime scenes where, you know, other people have robots other than the police, right? And so there are episodes where one of the robots gets killed and they need to like pull out data from its head, and they have this huge head prop that's like leaking and is bright colors and like is being interacted with, right? And they have all these like glowing things on people's faces, right? When Dorian's ever thinking or like accessing information, he has like these diodes on the side of his head that glow up, and I just like the higher reliance on a certain level of practical effect when you are having some CG mixed into there, because I think like the things that you're describing don't ruin a show for me. And I don't think they're ruining it for you. I just think they pull you out of the immersion. Right.
Yes. That's exactly it.
And so I think like, it's just a subtle difference between you and I and the way that we enjoy consuming various things. This isn't a criticism on you, but it just like goes to show that like for you, that isn't a big issue. For me, it helps me get into the headspace of like, oh yeah, it's the future. And I understand this show being made when it was, is you know, fundamentally made differently, and had to work within its own budgetary limitations.
I agree on the practical,
practical effects.
Practical effects of it, like Dorian when he got shot, he had like, you know, purple liquid coming out of him that supposed, you know, is like the oil that, you know, keeps him going. I mean, he's an android, know, whatever, so kind of thing, right? Like, he's an android, so.
Yeah, it's not just a robot where it's just servers and the important thing when you're calling something an android means that it is a synthetic life form. Like, he is alive in a sense of, like, there's an episode where he needs to get a new chest plate put in, and, like, their chest plates protect a lot of their internal mechanisms, and so, like, if he gets shot in the chest, he will die, and they don't just come back to life, right? They can be repaired to a certain extent, but it's an important distinction.
But yeah, so, like, I liked a lot of the practical effects they did with, you know, with Dorian and with some of the MXs and, you know, those kinds of things, too. I think it just, what it did for me, instead of it being, like, this strong cocktail of effects, was it diluted that. When you go into, like, a lot of these outside scenes and you see, like, them not put a lot of effort into a believable car on the street. Like, it was literally, they just drove a Ford Focus that they slapped them, like, big dome hubcaps on and painted it flat black. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get that they're using the cars that they have at the time, but, like, they could have, it diluted the strength of the effects overall. Yeah. So,
and I can see that being a problem for other listeners, right? Like, where your immersion comes from is important to a lot of people. So I get it.
Yeah. It's like every office scene had, this is also funny. Every office scene just had flashing lights in the background. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
They didn't mean anything. It wasn't from anything. It was just flashing lights in the background that's supposed to, like, give you this air of, like, futuristicness, which I thought was really funny. But so one of the other things was that, you know, it's not 2048, so I don't know, like, what kind of martial law we live in or, like, how people's rights are, but my man John Kennex was capping the fuck out of people just indiscriminately.
True.
He killed a lot of people. He just, like, murdered all these suspects. Like, the one where you're talking about, or no, a different one where they're harvesting, like, women's skin for sex robots, which is, like, fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
They just, like, walk into the lab where they're doing it, and, like, they have this guy dead to rights, and Kennex is just, like, pop, 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 just, like, mag dumps him, and he's like, well, he's not a problem anymore. Like,
because he's a badass.
Okay. Like, no, that's literally elite. Like, you can't. Well, I mean, we don't get into the debate about how it's what cops do now and they get away with it. But, like, in a show, like, come on, dude, like, arrest the guy. That's what this whole thing is supposed to be. So they're supposed to be stopping the guy and arresting him and throwing him in jail.
They
and
arrest just, the guy, like, that was murdered half selling the people, the organs, though.
Yeah, but they murdered, like, everybody else when they didn't have to. It's a
police raid. Murders happen.
Too real.
I'm being flippantly silly because you understand, right, I know that these are also just nitpicky things, and it's a television show.
Oh yeah, 100%. But, like, in a television show,
yes.
What's interesting is, like, you know, they always, like, try to make the cops seem like they're this, like, high morality order,
right, yeah,
and
they,
like,
tend to
they're
going to
arrest someone and they're not going to shoot until they're shot at, and, like, unfortunately, that's not often the reality that we live in.
Totally.
And so it's just, like, it's very interesting that they showed him as a cop a little more accurately than I think they probably intended to. And so that bugged, I guess.
Well, and I think it is important to cite that John is a very unstable person, and he is called out about this literally by his psychological profile that was done before he could return to work. And so,
but of course, like every crime procedural, they found a way to just ignore it and let him back on because they need him because he solves murders.
Yeah, he's very good at his job, right? So that was one of the reasons why they, like, pair him with Dorian, is because unlike the other MX, like, one of the reasons that he pushes his original MX out of the car is because the MX is grilling him about being in this kind of seedier part of town where he was going to a memory clinic to basically jog his memory from the raid, because he lost a bunch of the memories around it because he was in a coma for many months.
And he was exploded.
And literally, his leg is literally exploded, like, off. Again, very cool practical effects in that whole sequence where the raid's happening.
Yep. I agree.
But he pushes him out because he's being too nosy. Dorian knows all these same things, but chooses, because he has tact and emotional awareness, to address them in very different, more subtle ways. And again, that's like the subtler, smaller things that I think we could also call out about the show that are really successful rather than really detrimental to like the immersion, where I genuinely like the ways in which these two interface with one another. And I think like in a buddy cop reality, this show works in a lot of fun, interesting ways. Because they kind of hate each other and they put up with each other because they know they both have something that the other wants, and they actually start to kind of like each other by the end of the show. And I like that dynamic.
Yeah.
So I just think it's important to call that out.
No, that I will agree with is their dynamic, because they both know that without each other, something worse, they're fated for something worse. Like something worse is on the horizon, right? Like Dorian goes back to just not being activated. He just goes back to dormancy. You know, Kennex goes back to being with another MX that he's probably going to just push out of another car, or like, shoot in the face. He got shot. Like, you know,
there's a great scene where they're analyzing a mysterious sniper, and the MX like gives him a theory about like the potential of ricocheting. Right. And so he's listening to it. And then Kennex asks Dorian like, okay, well, what do you think? Like, I've gotten the very vacant robot's understanding, and like the robot then just comes up to him and be like, you're talking to a DRN who are decommissioned because they don't know as much as we do. And he's basically just nagging him about talking to Dorian. And so he just pulls out his gun and shoots the motherfucker, and everybody freaks out. Nobody knows what's happening. And then he gets grilled at the police station for pulling out his weapon out of nowhere to shoot. Like, you can't just shoot somebody, even if it's a robot, in the middle of a train station. And he's like, I'm sorry, he was insulting my partner. And that is a fun moment because it shows him A, sticking up for his friend, but B, how unhinged he truly is. Like, he has no problem shooting what he thinks of as a toaster in the middle of a crowded area.
Multi-million-dollar android, or whatever you want to call it, right? Because I don't even know. Are there androids, right? Yeah. The MXs, or are they just straight up?
No, they're all androids.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, those are just a couple of my like little things. You know, it wasn't.
I come on here and make it sound like it's.
I was a little bit toward the end. I was kind of over it.
Really? Okay.
Toward the end, I was pretty over it because I was like, "All right, same old, same old." Like, I think the last two episodes were actually decently interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, the second to last episode, you know, it covers the idea of like the Chromes, right? And Stahl, is that her name?
Yep.
Right. Stahl's a Chrome. She hates the Chromes, and that's a very interesting like concept that she's like, she hates her own kind. The Chromes are basically humans that were like hand plucked, their parents hand plucked their DNA to make them perfect.
Yeah, they're genetically modified in the womb,
right,
to make them the most attractive, successful, smartest,
artistic,
healthiest,
like
so
like possible being.
And
right?
Stahl is very much a mold breaker because like, pretty much universally, Chromes do not go into like policing or something like kind of more mundane like that.
A quote unquote failure in that sense, right?
Right.
Because she didn't become like
famous architects, talented musicians, bankers, like people that need a high level of intellect and usually also go along well with like extreme attractiveness and or intelligence, right?
Right. So, you know, this episode, it talks about how, like, this healthy Chrome has just died from natural causes. And they're like, that's weird.
That literally
can't happen because they are made to be perfect. And, like, you know, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, they find that, like, this guy or this Chrome has, like, DNA from other people. And anyways, they end up tracking the serial killer who's killing all of these Chromes and taking their, like, their DNA, their data, and injecting it into himself with like nanobot surgery to like try to make himself the perfect like person.
Yeah, he's trying to. He was in this trial that disfigured him severely.
Yeah,
and he looked perfectly fine before, but he basically is now trying to use that to his advantage to use the same technology to make him like the most attractive ever.
Yeah, it was like a failed trial. He looked fine before, or like, you know, they made it sound like he was super ugly and everybody hated him. Whatever, he's a decent looking person, whatever. But he didn't like his identity. He signed up for this trial to become a more pretty person, and then it didn't work. And then he was like motivated to make it work and killed to do it. And then we find out there's like this woman
that
he's
basically
who he's been talking with. He's doing it for so that he looks perfect enough and looks attractive enough to like deserve her.
Right.
And then we find out through this whole thing that she's blind.
Oh, it's and such a good
like,
reveal.
I didn't know how to tell you. And like that was that honestly was a fantastic episode. Like yeah, I that was probably really my favorite episode.
Because he shows up unexpectedly at her house. He can see her the whole time because
they live across the street from each
but
other.
But he pretends to live in a different place and that he's gonna come and visit. And everyone's so excited. And because of the modern technologies, even from afar, looking in through the apartment, he cannot tell that she's blind because she has like technologies to help her. Obviously, blind people can use computers even now very proficiently.
Yeah.
But, you know, she has like these sensors that you can see and people bring her groceries and those kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and honestly, that was a really like touching story. It was like, damn, you know, someone's going to want you for exactly who you are. Right. Like that was a really cool message.
He didn't need to do any of that and everything could have been perfect.
No, exactly. And the person he was enough to deserve love. And I, you know, that was like a very touching, very nice like episode, but I felt like that episode was unique amongst the list.
Yeah. I think
in that it had like a stronger message and something that actually like kind of made me feel some emotion. I was like, oh man, like this poor guy just thinks he's not deserving of anyone.
Yep.
Meanwhile, this gal can't see him and she loves him and wants like, you know, and of course there's like the dramatic moment where they finally meet and they're like, oh, you know, I love you and all this kind of thing. I'm blind. I don't care. You know, whatever. He's like,
as the cops are closing,
he's not fully
him.
Like perfect yet, but then like the cops close in around them and get him and this whole thing. But,
and he ends up, unfortunately, you know, not even succumbing to the police and taking his own life because his last words are like, everybody deserves to be loved, which is fair. Yeah. Like he is genuinely making a point and he did the worst thing possible to try to attain that. And it's a genuinely, truly interesting, tragic story, especially because the final shot of him is he jumps off the roof of this complex and you see him fall while they're interviewing his love interest, who's blind. So she can't even see what's happening. You know, it's like this weird, you know, gift of the Magi kind of thing for anyone who knows that story, you know, where he kind of gave up everything for this love. And in doing so, he kind of ruined the opportunity to find love. It's heartwarming and it's heartbreaking at the same time. And I don't know. It's just, I just like this show, man. It's just fun.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I get it. That's fair. I think, I'm not surprised that you like this show. Just, I think, well, you know, we've been doing this for like a little over a year, right? Yeah. And you have a type of show and like, I've come to understand that like, oh, I get why Presley likes this show.
Right.
Yeah. And like I said, that episode was great. The 13th episode was interesting because you have like Kennex, finally like solving the murder of his father.
Yeah. The sins of his father.
And you know, the sins of his father or whatever kind of thing. And yeah, that was interesting. I thought that was a really good episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was a little too late, right? To like save the series.
Yeah,
now,
if you're already in the two last episodes are not where you make or break a show. You know, a show needs to be strong. And then you get to those final two episodes that are like, oh, hot damn. Like now I need another season.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there are some interesting plots, but I think they were just a little on the nose as far as like some of the content, like sex robots. Of course, someone's going to like make a sex robot and try to like get harvest human skin to make a sex robot.
Of course, somebody's going to do that.
Because people are fucked up, Presley. If they're going to have androids that are like prostitutes or sex workers that are sex workers, of course they're going to try to make them as like real feel quote unquote as possible or something, right? Like they're going to try to make them as real as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that was just like, okay, yeah, totally. All right. They're human trafficking so that they can get nice skin on the robots so that their sex robots make more money.
Interesting.
That's not that wasn't that like, it wasn't far-reaching enough for me to like to really wow me, because like it's supposed to be 2048. We're supposed to have technology that like goes past anything we know, and people are making sex robots with real.
It's
skin.
Only 24 years from now.
Yeah, but the way they—I mean, you guys listened to the rolling like narrative at the beginning. Technology has surpassed like and is like so far advanced. It can't even be regulated. It can't even be fully understood. They have no idea what's out there. Like, come on. I don't know.
I want to hear something good that you liked about the show. I'm not going to let you go.
I said it.
That you liked those two episodes? Is that all you're going to say?
Well, those two episodes.
Okay.
And then I also really liked the like what you were commenting on about like kind of the the stark contrast between Kennex and Dorian and the other like cop in android partnerships is that like they're completely opposite. Okay. I did like their relationship and how like they gave each other shit. You kind of watch Dorian become a little more human over time, and kind of like you can tell he's kind of like calibrating the whole time and kind of trying to understand like Kennex better and like understand what it means to be human a little bit more.
Yeah,
that was interesting.
There's a good little moment in the pilot where they're first, you know, they get in the car for the first time and he like calls him man, you know, like he's like, you know, you don't need to, you just relax, man. And he's like, man, why do you call me man? And he's like, I'm just running my colloquial program, right? It's to make things exactly. easier, right? And there's like constant little interactions like that where he's like, you're supposed to be precise. And he's like, yeah, but saying 56.487, I could just say 56%. What's the point, right? And he's like, yeah, you actually do have a point.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, I just like the show.
And yeah, I liked that. I really liked that. I thought that was good.
So you have to watch more Andrew. And, you know, another season's coming, season two. What do you want from it?
I think for me, I want a little more of that overarching theme. I want to see the terrorist group, the syndicate. I want to see them matter more than just like John's trauma.
Yep.
An explanation as to why he's the way he is.
Yep.
Because it seemed like the way I don't remember exactly which episode, but there was a guy who they arrested who was part of it.
Yep.
The pilot. He basically insinuated, no, it was a later episode. It was like halfway through the season where his captain or whatever has been interrogating this guy,
mm-hmm.
trying to get information.
Yep.
That wasn't the pilot. It was
he was captured in the pilot is what I was saying.
Oh, sorry. Yes, he was captured in the pilot. But they were investigating, trying to figure out, like, get him to confess something or give him some information. And, like, I want to see that matter. I want to see the syndicate matter. So I would love to see, like, an investigation into that. Maybe that's the overarching because, like, a lot of crime procedurals, there's this overarching investigation, and they have, like, their own episodes that have like little investigations in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of culminates. And then the investigation of the episode,
the final,
it like the episodes start to tie in with the larger investigation. Yep. And you start to see those pieces coming together. Like, yes, that is a very like common thing that happens in crime procedurals, but why should we expect anything different? There's enough to do different there in the world that they've built to make it interesting enough to be in unique.
They've created a backdrop that allows for it to have uniqueness and interesting beyond just like, oh, it's a crime organization, right?
Exactly. So I would like to see that matter. So of course, we see some development with that. We see an investigation with that. And then we see as well what's going on behind the wall. And maybe the syndicate are people that are behind the wall. We don't know that. I'm guessing that.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that they probably are behind the wall. Because of course, if they're in the city, they're easier tracked. Then they'd probably have them round up already.
Yeah, what they say about the wall. You're right that the wall information is limited. What they say about it is that it's basically like an area that it got so bad in terms of its crime and its advancement and everything that they basically couldn't police it anymore. And so they just had to kind of shut it off and say, look, you got to deal with it yourselves, right? It created its own, like, municipality adjacent. And there's this massive wall, you know, like, hundreds of feet tall. It's not just, like, a little, like, you know,
fence. Yeah, and, like, completely impenetrable.
Yeah, exactly. And you see one person go over to the far side of the wall, which everybody says is, like, no one would do. Like, that is crazy to do.
That would be crazy to do.
You would have to be insane to want to do that.
It actually happens to be the doctor/scientist or whatever you want to call him who created the DRN and the XRN. He stole a bunch of android like chips or bodies or minds or whatever.
Synthetic souls. Which are what gives Dorian his emotions.
Exactly. He stole all those souls and then went over the wall.
Yep.
So that's got to matter too.
Yep.
Maybe he's creating synthetic souls so the terrorist group has their own army of androids, right? That's what I want to see.
Okay. I think that's fair.
What about you?
Two things. One of them is very much in line with you. I would love to see like a breach in the wall, you know, like a like where that's the inciting incident of the season and all of the crimes tie back to it. Basically, to serve as a smokescreen for things that are actually happening not on the other side of the wall, right? They're saying, oh, all these people are pouring in from this massive fissure in the wall. we got to deal with it. Mm-hmm. We got to, every crime kind of ties back to, oh, well, they came through the wall at this time, or they came through the wall at that time. But then in reality, the thing was kind of under their noses the whole time. Very similar to the Danica head was in their police vault the entire time. Yeah. And then kind of escapes through convoluted means to then wreak havoc so that they can go back over the wall. So I would have liked to have seen like a connection in the same way that you're talking about, where we don't even necessarily need to see what's going on the other side, but we need to know that there was a breach, and it's continuously letting in bad things, you know, kind of like a cut, like a wound that keeps letting in infections. Right.
Yeah.
Sure. But totally. The syndicate may not even be on that side. Right. And they're operating next door to the police station, something insane like that, where it's like,
or within the police station or something.
Yeah. Like, they miss something big, knows, right? That's right there. I think would be interesting. I'd also really like to flesh out the kind of romance personal side of like Kinnex and Stahl, and along with Captain Maldonado, who is the captain, who is constantly kind of being taunted by some of the people she's interviewed and stuff like that about like her age relative to her success and those kinds of things. Like, there are other secondary characters. You even have Dorian, who is emotional and like wants to go out and go party with Rudy, who is the kind of lab tech character. You know, seeing him, if he could forge a relationship beyond being just an android. Yep. You know, I think that there's room for that, and a lot of good areas for like conflict and misunderstanding and those kinds of things. You could even have a fun episode where Dorian is trying to date or is dating somebody and John's dating them at the same time. Like, silly, weird things like that, you know, and like there's room for levity and joy. And one of the things that's on the IMDb page in the fun facts section was the original creator, a guy named J.H. Wyman, claimed that he deliberately wanted to create a, quote, more hopeful interpretation of the future, contrasting with the more dystopian and bleak versions. Everything that we see in the city is like, people have everything they need. There's not, you know, sure, there's like, we see on the final episode, there's like homeless shelters and those kinds of things. But like, overall, it's not like grimy and terrible to exist in this world. It's, you know, maybe even parody or slightly better than what we have right now. When someone's sick, they go to like a little stall that has a doctor that can give them vitamins. And when you go to a shelter, you get your finger pricked and they give you nutrient supplements that give you enough nutrients so you're not going to die on the street, right? And they have beds. And so like, I like that that hopefulness exists in this world and can continue.
Yeah.
And then you create some dimension with the wall coming, part of the wall coming down and kind of leeching some of the badness from that side of things into it.
Yeah, I think that would be some interesting television.
I have to cite
my
often cited thing about this show.
Okay. Is that it's in Vancouver?
It is in Vancouver.
Yeah.
As I always call out, and it looks very much like Vancouver. There's some very distinct parts of it that are like, yep, they're driving on the highway in Vancouver.
New Vancouver, got it.
Maybe it's supposed to take place in New Vancouver. They always just say police. They never say like, you know, like an acronym, like, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
VPD.
Yeah, whatever. NYPD or whatever. It's never anything like that.
Yeah,
it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Even if they do say a name, I think they cite other places. Like, oh, the syndicate started in New Atlanta. And then it, like, they definitely do stuff like that, but I don't think they ever claim where they themselves are.
Yeah, which is interesting and weird, but whatever.
We didn't talk about...
You don't have...
Oh, good.
I was going to say, I guess then you don't have Presley knocking on your door going, this is not fucking Atlanta.
Look, I just like variety. You know, it's...
I agree.
We've talked about it, and so many of the shows that we watch, whenever they take place in a different place, I always notice it because it's always more interesting.
Any place with dimension
that isn't... You know, Vancouver has dimension, but you should acknowledge that it's there and then show some of the things that make it unique to that place. Don't pass it off as another place. Right?
Yeah.
It's like you go to New York and try to pass it off as London. It doesn't work because those are two very different places, like fundamentally. Yeah. When you think about like a great example is The Peripheral, the show we watched a little while ago, where part of it takes place in like rural Georgia, I think, or Missouri, one of the two.
Tennessee, something like that.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the South, and it's shown very backwoodsy. A lot of the folks there have the accents, everything. And then when they show London, it's very clean and futuristic, and the cars and the aesthetic, everything is clearly very different.
Yeah.
And that contrast creates importance to the space that the characters are in, and we need to have that in our shows.
I agree. I mean, Low Winter Sun also was like literally filmed in Detroit, and you can tell.
Big deal. It
does make a difference. The setting does make a difference. Yep. When it looks like Toronto to be New York, or you know, Vancouver to be everywhere, it's pretty obvious. I get it.
Yeah. And Vancouver is a perfect like stand-in city because it has like some skyscrapers, but it has also got like some suburbs, and it's got rural, and you know, but you know, you take Breaking Bad and you take it out of New Mexico, and a big part of what makes that show unique and interesting shifts away. Gone. You can't do that show nearly as well in any other place because the locale is such a character. And that's true of every show, whether or not you choose to make it that way or not. But if you were in a place, it matters to the narrative because different places beget different things, different types of people, different ways of living, different, you know, circumstance. And so that's why I always call it out. It's not because I hate Vancouver. I, in fact, love Vancouver and would move there in a heartbeat.
I know.
But it's very obvious when a show is passing Vancouver off as something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we didn't have any major violations in this show, because they didn't say that they were anywhere specifically. So
yeah, the only thing that I would have accepted, and I still would have called it out, but I would have laughed about it, is if they said they were like in the this city was in like the Nevada desert, but because of the future terraforming ability, like able to turn it into this like lush, you know, urban, you know, that would have been fun, right? But like just saying it's a random ass city somewhere, you know, in the US or whatever, it's just, you know, anyway, we can move on from my insane ramblings about the city of Vancouver and how everything secretly takes place there.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, so Presley, that then takes us to the star rating. So I want to know what your star rating is for this show.
Okay.
I feel like it's gotta be like 3 stars and up. It's not a 5, I don't think. I don't think it's a 5, but because like I feel like you wouldn't be this much of a fan of a show if it was a 1 or 2 stars. But
certainly,
I'm gonna let you recap, and then I'm dying to hear what your star rating is.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're interested in mine too. But
yeah, I have a guess, and I usually have a guess for you, but we're gonna get there. Yeah. So for new listeners joining the podcast, I'm sorry you had to hear a lot of ramblings about things you don't understand because I always reference our old episodes. But 0 stars should never have been an idea in anyone's head, let alone made into a show. It's just patently the worst thing ever. One is I needed a pilot to know that I didn't want to watch this show and it shouldn't have been a season. 2 stars is we got a season that was sufficient. It wasn't good enough to be renewed. It wasn't good enough to continue. And it probably wasn't that good of a season. 3 is the, you know, take it or leave it. We could have seen another season that could have improved upon what was there. Maybe not. Kind of if you enjoy our discussion, if you think the concepts are interesting, if you want to watch a fun cop procedural that's kind of low effort, that, you know, you will like it. But watch at your own risk is often what we say. 4 is the good show, needed another season, solid. Most people could enjoy it, or at least people that like these kinds of shows would enjoy it, because, you know, every taste is so subjective. That's one of the challenges that we face in our star rating. And 5 is the everyone will like it no matter what. And this is a crime to pop culture and fandom in general that this show did not get to continue on with more of itself.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mine's a 3. I really wanted to give it a 4. And the reason is that I enjoy the show. And that should be the only thing I need. And I remember when it was airing, right after it like finished airing at the time, I looked into if there was going to be more seasons of it. I like Googled it at the time. And I was so infuriated because Fox had like put out their report, because they do like Nielsen reports and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that while the reviews weren't good and while season 2's scripts had all been drafted, they had enough viewers to justify another season, where the viewership, ad revenue, whatever cost would justify the cost of making the show, they still weren't going to renew it. So basically it had a renewal order that they then canceled, which very much frustrated me. And so that's why I wanted to give it a 4. It was like it had just enough to kind of get there, but I'm gonna be restrained. I'm gonna recognize my own bias here a little bit and say, look, I recognize that the show isn't for everybody, but I have enough fun watching it where I wanna recommend it. And so if you're on my side of this argument, not even argument, this discussion, I should say, between Andrew and I, where it's like, you know, we just have different tastes in shows a little bit. And this is one of those clear examples. And I obviously have the view, like the old school bias of it. But if you enjoyed my side of it, then you would enjoy the show. So I think 3 is pretty easy for me.
Fair enough.
Okay. Do you want me to give you my guess or just tell you if my guess is right?
I do want to hear you guess. I have a locked in.
Yeah, I know you're locked in. I know nothing I would say. I think you're a definitive two. You're like, I got a season. It wasn't enough. Not enough for another show. I didn't really like that one season, but I wasn't. There were some episodes that I liked. I think one would be harsher than I would be expecting from you. So that's my guess.
Well, you're correct. Two is where I put this because one. And like my our golden star or our like North Star for a one is like after the pilot did I know this sucked and it was so bad that
inevitably
I,
like you're gonna be miserable inevitably the entire time you this. Watch it.
I feel like I didn't see enough in the pilot to know that it was gonna be.
It
horrible.
Took a couple episodes for the terror.
It
to
took
sink
a few
in.
Episodes for me to be like, yeah, I'm not really into this.
Well, and that goes to my general rule of show watching, which is you always give a show three episodes. That's my minute. Yeah. Like if I am dubious, if I like a show, I'll obviously watch it. Right. But if I'm dubious on a show and it's like, I don't really know. Pilots are off. Like if you judge just on a pilot, there are plenty of pilots of fantastic shows that are not representative of the show as a whole. Right. And so you need another two or three episodes to flesh out what the show's going to be like, how the characters behave, if the production value gets better after the pilot, those kinds of things. And so I think like, to your point, you're like, I needed a few episodes to know that I didn't really like this show, which is, I think, a very valid position to be in.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like a pilot happens.
Yep.
And then the show is like supported. Then it's like, yeah, we're going to make this show, right? We're going to continue with this.
Yep.
And then there's more production that happens, right? So the way the show is can change. And we've seen that it can actually change quite drastically.
Yep.
For better or for worse. Usually for better.
Well, I think about Constantine, where they wrote off the lead actress and brought in a different character for the rest of the season because they knew after shooting the pilot, we already shot it. We need to air it, but this character is not working. The contract dispute, whatever it is, we need to shift. And that happens often.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, solid two for me. One season was enough. I do think that, like, if there was a second season and they, like, kind of just built out those things a little more, like the wall and the in Syndicate and some of those like bigger themes, I think it probably could have been really good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, we did
two
it.
Is where I got put in. We did it.
Two
we did this.
Three. I like the show. It's fun. And I'm going to go on liking the shows that I know that you're going to hate. And we're going to go on and watch shows that I've watched before because that was the whole... Like, this is... like I said in the teaser last episode, this is one of the original shows that made me start to think of this podcast as an idea.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this show, having read what I read at the time and previously, I was like, this show, to Fox, the makers of the show, had the number of people that they would need to justify making another season. So why aren't they? Right. Let me think about it critically. That was like one of the main inceptions for a lot of the show. Same thing with Alcatraz, right? Alcatraz didn't have the best ratings, but it had really, really strong viewership throughout its whole run. Right.
Yeah.
And so like the difference there, I think, is important and why like I started this whole thing. And then it has, you know, dovetailed into, okay, well, if it got one season, we're going to review it eventually. Right. If it only made it one season. Right. But our list is very vast and I would say there's another 20 of these shows that I watched at the time that they were airing or close by that I was genuinely sad and curious as to why they were canceled.
Yeah, there's a lot of shows out there.
Yes, indeed.
There's a lot of shows out there. There's a lot of shows that were canceled after one season. So I mean, the list just keeps growing.
It's insane.
An endless well of
I'm always surprised because I have my Google News alert and then I check it every day and I would say. Once guaranteed one a month I get, and then occasionally I'll get one a week, like on certain months where like cancellations are really happening in a lot of shows.
Cancellation season.
Exactly. Right. Things don't get renewed at the, like this time, like in a couple weeks will be another round of them because spring is when a lot of shows end after the fall lineup went through. Right. And so you can see like a lot of those things start to happen. So I'll be curious to see how our list grows. But you can always check out the full list at our website, season1pod.com. If you're curious about it, look there for shows that you like, that you want to have us review. You can always let us know on social media at season_1_pod. If we should get to another show next, we do take that into consideration. We review shows because we wanted to, or because somebody was like, hey, you should do this one and we'll do it. I mean, that's why we did Freaking Geeks when we did it. Was because Anna was like, I want to be on the podcast.
Yeah. People have been like demanding Freaks and Geeks. People had been demanding that one.
Yep, there's another one that people demand, which we will get to. I think that might be spectacular, which will go unnamed until
then. Yeah. Yes, it will. Have half a brain, you'd probably be able to guess it. But yeah. Well, this was great.
Thanks, Presley. It was great for me. Sorry, guys, I got to watch a show I liked.
And we got to watch a show that we have a deeper view into Presley's mind for TV.
My random
psyche. And that's a good thing.
Is it?
I didn't hesitate for any reason other than I wanted to make sure that the moment really sank in.
Okay.
So there you go.
What's our next show?
Well, Andrew, are you ready to hear? Yeah, are you ready to hear?
I'm excited and nervous because I want to know. Maybe you'll pick a show like me where I know I like it and you'll hate it or something like that. I didn't think you'd hate Almost Human, but there's shows that I'm holding off on because I'm like, Andrew is gonna hate this show.
I didn't hate Almost Human. No, I hated on it.
Yeah, subtle, but
I didn't necessarily hate it. Like, yep. I think there was enough like structure there. It could have been a good show, but it just wasn't. So. Drum roll, please.
I'm cutting that out. It's going to sound horrible.
Yeah, it's going to it sounded bad and live. So, it's going to be Riches 2022 series.
Okay.
By the name of Riches.
Okay.
It's on Amazon Prime, I believe.
Got it. Anything? Did you look into any of it, or did you just look up the name and picked it out?
It's about a family, and they got money, and stuff happens.
Hey, you picked a good one. Do you want to know why?
Why?
It's only 6 episodes, baby.
Hey,
we love. If you're waiting for a short little nugget of a show,
I didn't know that. If you're waiting for a short show to jump on the train and actually watch with us, yeah, this is the one. You just have to have Amazon Prime.
So. Yeah, I wager they're all going to be an hour long, but 6 compared to 13,
probably
right? Just like Almost Human, right? Like, it's a pretty big difference. So, let's see if they can make up for the number of episodes with the quality of episodes.
Yeah,
let's
put it that way. Hey, you know what? Peaky Blinders seasons are only 6 episodes.
Okay.
And that show is a fucking banger. So. Okay,
fair enough. We love Killian. We love a lot of other UK-based actors that are in that. Because I'm pretty sure that's one of those shows like Doctor Who where every single person that's a UK actor has been in it at one point or another.
Sort of, yeah, kind of.
It's not a disparagement. Yeah. I mean, that's like...
Yeah, no, it's true. Star there's Trek a lot. I mean, there's just a lot of characters.
You know, Star Trek and the Next Generation, like... Everybody who's a famous actor in the 80s and 90s was on that show.
Yeah.
As a cameo. So I feel like that's Peaky Blinders and Doctor Who's the same way. We did it, Andrew. This is a good episode. Thanks for pushing through your illness. I hope everybody else is feeling good in the springtime weather. Everybody we know is getting sick. So try to stay healthy out there.
Allergies, too. Allergies are kicking.
That's me.
It's like one front or another. It's like allergies are kicking people's ass, or it's like this mysterious cough thing that just lingers for like a month?
Yeah.
Or
whatever. We were meant to, like we had to delay it just because you weren't feeling well the whole time. And you were, even before now, like we'll edit out like the 2 or 3 coughs that you had, but you were coughing like every other sentence when I last spoke with you about recording. So.
It was bad.
Postponed, but thank you, dear listeners, for putting up with the postponement. I think we're going to be reasonably back in 2 weeks time with Riches being only 6 episodes. So thank you for putting up with our delay. But good job, Andrew. I'm looking forward to this next show.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in once again, and we'll see you in 2 weeks time. Until then, my name is Presley.
My name is Andrew. We watch it so you don't have to.